All right, good evening. Thanks so much for coming out to the continuation of our journey through Megillas Esther. So last time we took a look at the third and fourth chapters, but you know, the Megillah has so much there and we could have the benefit of an extra other, but if we had another, you know, two or three others, you know, there would still be what to discuss with the Megillah. So I thought we'd go ahead a little bit. You know, summarize the events that happened in the intervening chapters, but I want to take a look at the sixth chapter, which is really the turning point, and it describes how Ahasuerus's sleep was disturbed, how he couldn't sleep, and that led to his asking for his book of Chronicles to be read to him, and feeling the void or some sort of regret or anxiety about the fact that he hadn't given proper reward to Mordechai, who had saved his life in the past. So the chapter opens up with this scene of Ahasuerus not being able to sleep. And, you know, in many ways, it's one of the more, you know, comedic parts of the Megillah. You have Haman stomping in, thinking that the person who the king wants to honor is him. He requests this elaborate and kind of ridiculous reward of being paraded through the street. And then Ahasuerus says, no, actually, it's not for you. It's for your arch enemy, Mordechai. Then you have Mordechai parading, Haman parading Mordechai in the street. That really seems somewhat comedic, but like with every other part of the Megillah, there's a lot going on here. And I want to explore the events. Why couldn't Ahasuerus sleep? And what was the greater picture that was happening, you know, behind the scenes? So the chapter opens up. Laila hu nadada shnas ha-melech. That night, the king's sleep was literally shaken. He couldn't sleep. And Vayomer, he said to his servants, Lavia Sefer Zichronos, Divrei Hayomim, to bring the book of records, the Chronicles, Vayu Nikroyim Lifnei HaMelech, and they were read before the king. So why couldn't Ahasuerus sleep? You know, is this the only time he couldn't sleep? Did he not take, you know, melatonin or something that night? You know, why couldn't he sleep? Why was it, or it sounds like that wasn't that he couldn't fall asleep, but maybe he fell asleep, but then it was disrupted. It was shaken. It wasn't, didn't say he was ma'orer from his sleep, that he woke up. It says that he was shaken. It was this sudden end to his sleep. And it certainly suggests a great deal of anxiety that was going on, not just that, you know, he took too long of a nap the day before. So why was his sleep disturbed? So the Ibn Ezra says that, you know, pretty straightforward, that he was concerned because he was worried that he would be punished for a promise that he made and hadn't kept. And that would make sense why he asked for the Book of Chronicles to be read. Maybe there was something that he forgot, a promise he forgot to fulfill, and that's why he couldn't sleep. But we skipped some of the parts in between. But basically, what happens between where you left off and now is so Mordechai wouldn't bow to Haman, and Haman gets approval for his decree against the Jews. Mordechai pleads with Esther to go advocate on their behalf. Esther asks the Jews to fast, and she invites Haman and Ahasuerus to a banquet. And now Haman is so excited that he's invited to this exclusive party. It's only the king and me, and he goes home and he's bragging about it. And then right after that, we're told about Haman bragging about his invitation, then we switch to the scene of Ahasuerus not being able to sleep. And the Malbim picks up on that and says that Ahasuerus's inability to sleep was a result of the request that Esther had made. She says, if I found favor, and if this is good before the king. So it uses this repetitive language. And the Malbim understands that this indicated to Achashverosh that Esther was talking about, was alluding to the fact that he had failed to, as a leader, administer justice or justly reward someone in his kingdom or people in his kingdom who had benefited him. So it's he was reading into Esther's request that she's saying, can you grant this my personal request, but also as a ruler, there's something that you should have done and that you haven't done. And that's why he instructed for the Book of Chronicles, the Book of Records, to be brought. And the Gemaras and Rashi say that also a little bit of a different spin on the fact that this was going on the invitation that Esther had, or the request that Esther had made to come to the banquet, because the way the Megillah left off at the end of chapter 5 was Haman was going around bragging that he was the only one who was invited to this banquet with Esther and the king. But what do you think Achashverosh is thinking? This queen comes after a month, not unannounced, and do you offer any requests? And she says, can you come to a banquet, just me and you? Okay, that could be, understandable. It's been a while. But can you and Haman come to a banquet with me? I think he's probably a little bit suspicious. Why is she just inviting me and Haman? The same reason why Haman was so honored that he's the only one who got an invitation. Achashverosh is thinking, well, why did Haman get why was it me and Haman? Okay, one thing, I want you to come down, I'm going to make a banquet for all the king and all of his officers, but if it's for you and Haman, that sounds a little bit suspicious. And the Gemara says, going to the opinion of Rava, that he says, why was it that Esther invited Haman? Perhaps Esther and Haman are in cahoots to kill me. And that's why he couldn't sleep. He's thinking, why just me and Haman? So, and he couldn't sleep. And he was thinking, is there anyone, talking, lo hava gavra the rochem li the hava modali? Is there no one who likes me who will tell me? Maybe other people are in on it as well, and nobody's telling me. So he said, maybe there's someone who helped me and I didn't pay him back. And so people refrain from revealing this to me. Maybe Esther and Haman are plotting against me, and no one else is telling me about this because there's someone who I owe something to, who I didn't give reward to, and therefore no one really wants to help me. So I have to take care of this. And that's why he asked for the Book of Records to be read to him. I think when we read it as children or the children's book, we kind of imagined as, why was he reading the Book of Records? Just, okay, this is the king's bedtime stories. But, it is significant. Why did he want that book to be read to him as opposed to, whatever else they read, tales or different stories or legends? So the Gemara points out, and the commentaries also pick up on the fact it was specifically the king wanted the Book of Records to be read because he had this feeling that he owed someone something. And Rashi points out that even though it seems like something that's not beyond nature, that the king couldn't sleep and he had things on his mind, Rashi points out that this was miraculous. He says, Nes Haya, and that it was a miracle that Hashem had planted this thought into Achashverosh's head to lead him to request that the Book of Records be read. So this was all being coordinated from above, but on the basic level, he couldn't sleep because he was worried that he didn't pay someone back, either because just as a general concern about the way he should run his kingdom, or more specifically because of the invitation that Esther had just extended, just for him and Haman, and he was worried that there was a plot against him, and that no one was telling him because he owed something to someone who had helped him in the past. But then there's another interpretation of Rabbi Tanchum in the Gemara, and I think this is why sometimes we read it with the Yom Narayim trope, the Hamelech, because Rabbi Tanchum says when it refers to Hamelech, it doesn't mean Achashverosh, or doesn't only mean Achashverosh, but Nada Dashnas Malku Shel Olam, that the sleep of the king of the universe was disturbed. That Hashem was disturbed, that after that this decree was sealed against the Jewish people, so Hashem is Avinu Malkeinu, he's our father, our king, and his sleep was disturbed, so to speak. How could he kivyachol sleep when there was this decree against the Jewish people? And as a result of this, also the Rabbanim say in the Gemara that it was the angels were frightening Achashverosh in order to get him to realize that he should reward Mordechai, the one who had saved his life. And this just shows the idea of Imo Anochi Betzara, that Hashem is with us in our pain. And the Maral says that this is illustrative of Hinei lo yonom velo yishan shomer Yisrael, that the guardian of Israel neither slumbers nor sleeps. What does that mean when we say that? You know, we say it after davening every morning. Hinei lo yonom velo yishan shomer Yisrael, the protector of Israel never sleeps. The Maral says that means that when there is a decree of annihilation against the Jewish people, so that's a matter that is relevant to Hashem. Meaning it's something that Hashem is that impacts Hashem. And that's why the Nada Shnas HaMelech, that the sleep of the king of the universe was disturbed, because his fate is tied into the fate of the Jewish people. Obviously, Hashem is limitless, but that Hashem, we are the Am Hashem, we're the people of Hashem, and therefore, if there's a decree against us, or if we're in a downtrodden state, so that impacts Hashem in the sense where that he can't sleep, he's disturbed and is occupied and is attentive to the struggles of the Jewish people. And again, this is why many Bali Kriya will read it. You know, Hamel left to allude to the Ribono Shel Olam, that after all this time, even though the Jews were not behaving exactly how they should, and even though they maybe needed to some extent this decree against them to cause them to return, but Hashem was still with them, was still with them in their pain and in their struggles, and was not sleeping, was not ignoring them. And when the decree was sealed and things were proceeding to be carried out, so the sleep of Hashem was disturbed, and it was disturbed as a result of the actions of the Jewish people. That Esther fasted, they got all the Jewish people to fast and to daven, and when the Jewish people did that, it disturbed the king's sleep. It caused Hashem to be responsive in a way that he hadn't been up until this point. And now with the request for how the king should honor the person who benefited him. So the Megillah continues that they read from the Book of Records, and it was written that Mordechai reported about Bigson and Teresh, that they sought to kill him, and that Mordechai reported them. So Achashverosh asks, what reward has been given to Mordechai for this? And the servants of the king said, that there hasn't been anything done for him. And at this point, Haman was in the courtyard, and he stomps in, and he asks Haman, "Okay, you're my second in command. What should I do about this situation?" And what should be done for the man whom the king wishes to honor? And Haman said in his heart, is there anyone whom the king wished to honor more than me? So then he presents this very extravagant parade that he thinks is going to be set up for him. But as much as we've seen that Ahasuerus seems like, you know, he's not the, you know, most intelligent person, not the shrewdest person, doesn't always realize what's going on, it does seem that Ahasuerus was actually asking Haman this question as a type of trap. Meaning, you know, he realized that Haman was, you know, maybe taking advantage of his power, and you have your you know, guy who's, you know, kissing up to you, but you can see that he's, you know, he's pushing it a little bit, plus the fact that he was suspicious about Esther's invitation. So when he's asking Haman, Malos Vayis Hasher HaMelech Chafetz Bikaro, what should be done for the man whom the king wishes to honor? So he's asking it to, you know, as a type of entrapment. And because Ahasuerus knew that Haman would incorrectly think that his words were about him. And so his plan was that which Haman would request, he would do for Mordechai. And the Malbim points out that he didn't ask Haman what should be done for the one whom the king wishes to give Yakar and Gedula, the glory, splendor, and Gedula, greatness. Because Haman would have known that the king wasn't thinking about him, because it already said that Mordechai had reached Gedula, that Shegdilu Mikol Asarim, that Haman had been promoted for before all of his officers. So that's why he uses the word Bikaro for his yakar, for his glory or splendor, because that wasn't really a matter of promotion. That was an additional level of honor. So Ahasuerus chooses his words very precisely and asks about how to do this additional measure of glorification, presumably for someone who was already at a high status. And Haman says, "What should you do? Let the royal apparel be brought to him, and let him ride on the king's horse, and have him be paraded around, saying, 'So should be done for the man whom the king wishes to honor.'" And you know, this was all so that Haman would be subdued. That is his rise to power. You see that Ahasuerus was suspicious of it, and that's why he wanted to, he led him on, meaning he asked it in a way and that, you know, Haman would naturally request something over the top. As the Malbim picks on the word, you know, yakar, that to do it in a very extravagant type of presentation. And he was trying to egg Haman on to say the most outrageous type of thing he could think of in order to give that honor to Mordechai. And it also explains why he asks, and I really hadn't thought of this before, even though it seems very obvious. Okay, so Haman requests all of this, and it makes sense that, okay, sorry, Haman, you're not the one who I was thinking about, but that's a great idea. Why don't you have this done for Mordechai? You could see that Haman would be very upset. Why does Ahasuerus tell Haman that he should be the one to lead Mordechai through the city, exclaiming that this is what is done for the one whom the king wishes to honor? That it was clearly a way of subduing Haman. and that he realized that Haman hadn't always been so honest with him. So the Malbim says, because of his trickery, Roy Shirod's Lefanov Gaved, that it was proper that he should run before him as a slave. Meaning this was he specifically picked Haman to go lead him, to go to lead Mordechai to show Haman that, you know, while he may have been second to the command in command to the king, he wasn't the king, and you know, he should know his place. That's why he asks Haman. Again, just the way, you know, you think of it, it's like, okay, that's kind of funny. Haman's the one leading him, but it's not usually the way things run, that the second in command is the one to, you know, to lead the parade, even of someone who had benefited the king. But Achashverosh was already onto him, and that's why he ordered that Haman be the one to lead Mordechai through this parade. And those are some commentaries that allude to the fact that this was the king of the universe who is now starting to take, I mean, retribution from Haman. He was now starting to lower him from the gedula that he had advanced to. And this is, I didn't put it on the sheets, but this is the part of the chilling statement that Haman's wife Zeresh says to him after he returns home in disgrace. She says that she says, "Vizerazishta." She said to him, "Im izera haYehudim Mordechai asher achilos linpa lefanav lo sucha lo ki nafal tifo lefanav." That if Mordechai is of the Jewish people, you'll surely fall before him. Meaning, Zeresh sees that the tables have turned, and now that Mordechai, who's from the Jewish people, has now been promoted to a position or situation of prominence, Zeresh knows that this is the end for her Haman. So you also see that the Melech Malchei Amlachim is also arranging for Haman to fall from his promotion and for Mordechai to be raised up. But there's also, if you look at the language in these verses, in verse number 10, in verses 7 to 10. So it uses different words for hurrying. Vayomar melech lahaman, maher kachas elavush esasus. Quickly go and get the clothing and the horse. And then it says in verse number 12, vika haman es elavush esasus, v'albeishas Mordechai, and he went and prayed to Mordechai through the city. V'yashav Mordechai el shar hamelech, v'haman nitchaf El Beso Avel Bachafoy Rosh. And Haman, many translated as hurried, literally he pushed his way through, but even after this, he hurried home. So Achashverosh asked him, go and hurry and do this thing for Mordechai. Then Haman rushes home. And then we see later on that after all of this, Sarise Hamelach, the chamberlains of the king, Vayavhilu Lahavias Haman El Mishne Asher Asasa Esther. They hurried, and by Vayavhilu, the language of Bahul is like they nervously rushed him to this feast. So why is everyone in a hurry? It seems like everyone's in a hurry. So why was Haman in a hurry after? So first, why did Achashverosh command Haman to hurry to give this honor to Mordechai? And we see because he was suspicious of Mordechai, and he wanted Haman's dreams of glory, or maybe even usurping the throne, to be pushed down right away. So after this, he says, "Go, hurry, do this," and that would at least cause him to lose his sense of haughtiness over his position. That's why Achashverosh asked Haman to hurry. Haman hurried home because he was so, Maral says, and it makes sense, he was so humiliated. And because he was so humiliated by having to lead Mordechai through the streets. And also people were lining up after hearing that there was a person who was going to be paraded that the king wanted to honor. So the people too thought that it was Haman. You know, Haman's this person who's making all these advances. Everyone was in the street waiting to give honor to Haman. Then they see that Haman's the one leading the horse. And, you know, this caused an extra degree of humiliation for Haman. And that's why he hurried home, wanting to get out of the situation so quickly. And Shlomo Alkubetz, the composer of Lecha Dodi, said that when Haman returned home, that he was already not given the honor that he was used to. It said that usually the people would clear the path and allow him to walk through. But when he returned home after this, people didn't do this anymore. They realized that if Haman is the one leading Mordechai and the horse, so Haman must not be so prominent anymore. And he had to make his way through the crowds without any outside assistance. So that's why he was, he nitzchach, that's why he pushed his way through, because already people weren't giving him the honor that they had been. Specifically, they didn't clear a path for him that he was used to. So he really had to push his way through the mob. And then we see about how Haman was then hurried to the banquet that Esther had prepared. And without even missing a beat, so this was also through Hashgacha that, now because Haman's downfall had already been started, and because the decree was sealed against the Jewish people, so that the chamberlains arrived so quickly in the middle of his discussion with his advisors regarding about how to deal with Mordechai. This, because Haman returns home, he's talking to Zeresh, his wife, and the members of his household. And then right away, before he has a chance to, shave and shower and get ready, the king's chamberlains were already there. And again, the symbolism is to the servants of the king of the universe, that now time was short, the decree was sealed, and the Hashgacha protection was in favor of the Jewish people. And without even allowing Haman time to get ready, the chain of events that were now going to unfold began right away, and Haman was brought to the feast, which would then lead to his downfall. And also the idea of hurrying, the Maharal says that normally events take a normal amount, regular amount of time, but when they're done through Hashgacha, when they're done Darshu Min Hashem Yizbrach, something that's specifically from Hashem, once it begins to unfold, so the intervention is accelerated and doesn't proceed at a normal pace. That's why there's a statement that the salvation occurs keheref ayin, the blink of an eye. And sometimes we think that things are so bad and they'll need so much time and so much work to improve, but then in the blink of an eye, something turns around, something changes, and that specifically when there's divine providence involved, then things happen at a much quicker pace. So this is in the turning point of the Megillah, that when the Jewish people, despite the fact that they weren't on a whole living the lifestyle that they should have been living, but when they got together in a state of unity and they prayed and they fasted and were committed to changing their ways, then the Ribbono Shel Olam was disturbed, was involved, was occupied with thoughts of them. And this shows the tremendous power of tshuva and tefillah, that we can go from, as the Rambam says, nechlas tshuva, you can go from someone who is basically despised by Hashem, who's distant, whose service isn't desired by him, to someone who's so close, and so close, and the relationship is so intimate that the king literally can't sleep and then is occupied with thoughts of them. So whether we take the approach that the king is the Ribbono Shel Olam and he was disturbed, or even the more simple approach that was Achashverosh, who was worried, as Rashi says, even that was a nace. I mean, that is miraculous. And like with all events of the Megillah at every stage, there's hashgacha behind the scenes. And, you know, we really, when we take a closer look at all of these little snippets from Megillas Esther, which we think are just stories that go together, even humorous stories, they really are all part of the unfolding of the plan that Hashem has for the Jewish people. And they came about specifically in response to our efforts to become closer to the Ribono Shel Olam. And we see that has a tremendous impact, and that can accomplish effects that are beyond the natural. That once we gain that divine favor with Hashem, the tables will turn quickly, and Yeshua will happen, salvation will happen, Karef Ayin, in the blink of an eye. And this is a model that was established in the Megillah, but it also is also a model that we can take with us. That even though things look bad, we gather together, we daven, we examine our ways. Salvation can come in the blink of an eye, and Hashem will always be occupied with our well-being.